Hope everyone has had a good time to worship the Lord together so far. And by good, I mean that it was pleasing in the sight of God, that your heart has been drawn in such a way that it grows, that it expands in your understanding of whom it is that God is purposing you to be. We are part of God's special creation. If you remember in your reading of the scriptures through your life, you may have noticed the various times when God lifts up the idea of his closeness to man. It begins in the text of Genesis, in the beginnings of the dialogue between God and man, where we are reminded and told that we have been made in the image of God, in the likeness of God. And that likeness includes the disparity of genders, male and female. He created them. And that was required by the plan of God to fulfill the design of what would be eventually referred to by us perhaps as the home. It's in the context of the home that the primary growth and development of the future of God's people is often found. It is the seeds of those moments and those times in which hearts are grown. Opportunities of maturity are seen to their fruition. The Bible has quite a bit to talk about in regards to those relationships, and because today is a day in which we honor part of that plan, we're going to take some time to remind ourselves of God's perspective and teaching on those matters. And it's very important for us to do so. The call of one who would serve in that special capacity and that special way is challenging. The world around us is full of the relentless consequences of fathers who have backed away from the spiritual and sometimes physical intent and obligation of God. The need for godly fathers extends well beyond whatever you may think the problem to be. Our perspective is very often limited by a simple fact that we only interact with a small segment of the possible people that are in our sphere. If you were to go down and note the people you spoke to in the last week, you'd have a very small list. Very few jobs require massive interaction with huge swaths of the community around us. We often have a small little circle, close-knit family and friends or people we might interact with, so we don't see the scope of problems, though there might be plenty in our own field of view. We don't see the scope of problems in the bigger fields and the bigger places. I'm going to tell you some facts from the context of our environment, and perhaps that might change your view. 12 truths about the condition of many homes in our country, in our community, and perhaps your next door neighbors. And maybe even the home in which you live and the home in which you came from. 43% of children in the United States live in a home without their biological father. 90% of homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes. 80% of rapists are motivated with displaced anger that came in part due to their fatherless home. 71% of teenage pregnancies are connected to a home where a father was not present. 63% of youth suicides come out of a home where a father was not there. 85% of children who exhibit behavioral disorders come from fatherless homes. 90% of adolescent repeat arsonists live only with their mother. 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. 75% of adolescent patients in chemical abuse centers come from fatherless homes. 70% of juveniles in state-operated institutions have no father in the home in which they were raised. 85% of youth in prison grew up in a home where a father was never found. Fatherless boys and girls are twice as likely to drop out of high school, twice as likely to end up in jail, four times more likely to need help for emotional or behavioral problems. Have you ever thought that one man could make no difference in the life of another? Math tells us otherwise. Please note that in those percentages, it didn't even tell us how good of a father they were, what their interests were, if they were committed to the cause of the upbringing of their children, if they made sacrifices on the benefit of their family. It simply only tracked their presence, that they were there or not there. So again, if you lived under the illusion that you yourself or one man could never accomplish any kind of good in the lives of others, you can wash that all away. Because if you choose the role of a father and invest yourself in it, you can have massive impact. Not only, by the way, on one generation, but perhaps for generations to come. The Bible reminds us in a very broad way that a father needs to develop a perspective and mindset that is engaged in the development and the spiritual well-being of the children that are in their care. If you will note, just briefly in Ephesians in the 6th chapter, by inspiration of God, Paul provides to us verse 4, "And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." The simple expectation is that God's design and desire is for fathers to be involved, be participatory in the rearing and raising of what God has blessed them with. A precious soul, a heart ready to be enthused, trained, and loved. The Bible then calls upon all who would hear the melodious sound of God's voice through the pages of the Scriptures to rise up to the challenge. And I'll tell you, I think most fathers can repeat this basic truth. Being a father is not some easy road to take. Perhaps that's why so many run from the responsibility. It's expensive in ways beyond the dollars and the cents. Because the investment that you make is the investment of your very heart. And that investment is incalculable in cost. You can't really put a dollar value on something so precious, can you? But you invest it wholly and completely in those whom you love. We're going to take time this morning to remind ourselves about three principal truths in the call to fathers through the Scriptures. We're going to do so hopefully in a way that, while reminding us of the steep challenge, presents to us the possibility not only of minimal success, but great victory. That will more than just be the statistic that says we were there so our kids didn't. We perhaps create an environment so rich and full in the testimony of God that would the possible circumstances exist that our own children find their lives in so many broken, shattered pieces that they, like the prodigal son, turn back to their father and say, even though he won't even accept me as a son anymore, it would still be better to be with him than anywhere else. But they look to us with that same kind of potential compassion and hope. And that we ourselves have the kind of heart that we look at those broken pieces and we say, no, you're not my hired hand. You are my son. You are my child. And my heart rejoices. We need those kind of godly fathers. We need to be those kind of godly people. And so the first one, as outlined for us this morning, is a simple one. A call to teach. God's expectation from the Old Covenant to New was that fathers are invested in the upbringing spiritually and physically of those who are in their home. There's a number of simple ways in which we accomplish that challenging task. If you'll notice in the Old Testament, two passages from the text of the Psalms. The first coming from the 44th Psalm. God, we have heard with our eyes. This is Psalm 44, verse 1. Our fathers have told us the work that thou didst in their days, in the days of old. The same truth rings through in Psalm 78. Verse 1 of the 78th Psalm, listen, O my people, to my instruction. Incline your ears to the words of my youth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not conceal them from their children, but to tell the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wondrous works that He has done. It's a pretty common event in many families for someone to come to the old folks and ask about the good old days. Maybe the good old days for your household's generation is, tell us about the days before the internet. Tell us about the days when music came to you in this thing called an 8-track. And you slip this giant cassette into the car. It's huge. And the sounds of Merle Haggard and Johnny Cash came through the tinny sound of speakers. Tell me of the good old days where you had to crank your car to start it. Or how about tell me of the good old days of what God did for you and what God accomplished in your life. And what was your life like before you encountered the testimony of the Son of Christ, and how did it change in the bonds of service to Him? Spend time with your children, men. Tell them Bible stories, gospel songs. Lead them in prayer. Use the circumstances, the situations, and the structures of your life to remind them of the invisible attributes of God, the testimony of the heavens. Why would you entrust that special task to anyone else? And understand this, even if you aren't aware, you are teaching your children today and every day in the past by your example. They will see far more about God and about you than your words can ever declare. Dorothy Nolte wrote a series of truths in a semi-poetic form, and I just want to read a few of those from a very long list this morning. She writes under the title, Children Learn What They Live. If children learn or live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If they live with hostility, they learn to fight. If they live with fear, they learn to be apprehensive. If they live with pity, they learn to feel sorry for themselves. If they live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. If they live with jealousy, they learn to feel envy. If they live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If they live with encouragement, they feel and learn to feel confident. If they live with tolerance, they learn patience. If they live with praise, they learn appreciation. If they live with acceptance, they learn to love. If they live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If they live with recognition, they learn that it is good to have a goal. If they live with sharing, they learn generosity. If they live with honesty, they learn truthfulness. If they live with fairness, they learn justice. If they live with kindness and consideration, they learn respect. If they live with security, then they learn to have faith in themselves and in those about them. And if they live with friendliness, they learn that in a bad world and bad places, there are still nice people. These are lessons that while walking in the role like Jesus describes in Matthew in chapter 5 and verses 13 through 16, that's the contrast of the world in many ways where he talks about the power of salt and light. They learn by your salt and by your light how to live before maybe even you speak a word. For think about this truth. The reflection of the life of Christ that is shining through you will reflect most brightly upon those who are closest to you. So they will see faithfulness. They can see obedience and worship. The consideration and planning for spiritual things in the midst of a broken world. They can see prayer and Bible study, responsibility, courtesy, and kindness. They learn to say thank you and mean it. You might want to pay attention to the text of Proverbs in chapter 3. We read a portion of it already. We're going to pick up and add to it and continue a little bit further. After the sixth verse, it continues in verse 7, the third chapter of Proverbs. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. So your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves. Even as a father, the son in whom he delights. You probably could list off a long, never-ending list of things you want your children to know. And so how to condense it down to a short, pithy sentence is probably impossible, certainly for me. I don't do short sentences well. But I might frame it this way, and I'm speaking specifically to children right now. The scriptures tell us that there are two great things for you to pay attention to. From both the Old Testament and the New, to foremost, honor your parents. It was codified as one of the primacy or primary commands of the Old Testament law, and then reminded to us repeatedly in the work of Christ. And then in Ephesians in chapter 6, in that lead-up text to the fourth verse in verses 1 through 3, where you're reminded of it again. So honor your parents. And though I know it's difficult at times, because it's easy, thinking back to my own childhood, to say my parents don't know, they don't understand, they were never here, they won't understand what I'm saying, if I tell them this, they're going to get mad at me. And by the way, all those things might be true. And they really will get upset with the choices that you've made. You need to tell them because it opens the door for a fabulous opportunity. And there's another thing that kids don't want to do. Listen to your parents. It's not always easy to listen to them. Sometimes the world is telling you a different message. Sometimes your heart is telling you, I hear you, but I don't want to do the thing that you're suggesting or telling or mandating. God reminds us through the scriptures that the wisdom that comes from those who have lived before us may very well do the very simple task of keeping us alive. And sometimes we look at a passage that will tell us a plain truth like that, and we'll say, yeah, but the choice that I'm making, it's not life or death. But I'll tell you that actually sometimes they are. But the life or death on the line isn't your flesh and blood. It's your soul. It's your future. It's the future of those you haven't even met yet, who may one day be in your home. It's the future of their grandchildren. And so the things that you listen to, the advice that's given, listen well. In Proverbs 23 and verse 22, a reminder is given, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. By inspiration, God tells us to pay attention. The easy part of that is the reminder that one day you won't be able to call and ask. Some of us don't have that privilege. We can't call some of our parents and say, hey, what would you do? Even though we would deeply desire to be able to. But even more so, it's not just about their lack of availability. It's reminding us why you still have time, no matter what your age. Call and listen. sometimes just to hear their voice. A second task, though equally challenging for both sides of the relationship, is the expectation to discipline. Discipline's a rough thing, but it's not rough in the ways that you might think. For it too is love, but it's love lived. It's not just loved in word form. It's not some beautiful sonnet or poem. Oh, I love you so much. Half the time, those sonnets that are written that you think are about some great love story are probably about food or some favorite activity and aren't actually about people or relationships. You see, love in action at times requires correction. It requires the kind of stability to change away because there's far more in the future than what we can see just right in front of our eyes. Our nose kind of gets in the way. We only can see this far. I can only see this far in my future. No matter how old you are, you're still shackled by the limitations of the inability to know what tomorrow actually looks like. And if you live in Tennessee like we do, or if you're visiting, you know that whatever the forecast is for tomorrow is probably kind of wrong and equally kind of right. Because if it says it's going to rain, it might have a thunderstorm. And if it says it's going to be dry, we could have thunder snow. I mean, all those things are possible. And they've all happened. And yet, we still act as if tomorrow is something concrete and immutable. And we know exactly what it's going to be. But correction and discipline is often necessary to protect us from the unknowns. In the text of Hebrews, God reminds us that all of us have profited and benefited from the work of a father. Hebrews 12, verse 5. In context, it continues, "And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline?" That's a pretty harsh image coming to the fore. Do you remember what a scourge is? It's a tool designed to inflict pain. But a second application of that is, remember, it purifies behavior. The scourge in this case is the sponge that's wiping away the rebellion to bring about the potential for great hope. Discipline then will help prepare our children, your children, and us for the challenges that life will present. We're reminded from the Proverbs, Proverbs 19 and verse 18, that we chasten them while there is still yet hope. Or there's still the bendable will to be trained to be more like God. It also removes foolishness. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. And at some point, we put away childish things and we take on the things that lead to maturity. The Father leads in that as well. With a reminder from Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 11, that temporary pain, that internal anguish of, "I want to, but Dad said no," it fades. And eventually you come back to, "I'm glad Dad said no, because he should have said no a few more times. And maybe I would have listened. Perhaps I should have listened. It would have been better had I been more attentive." The Bible tells us in Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 18 is a reminder of this truth. The only person who refuses correction is identified by Scripture as being a fool. No one wants to be in that place. In Jeremiah 7, we are reminded that an entire generation presented a stiff-necked, a response to God's correction that resulted in their demise. And that was the full expression of their foolishness, that they ended up going not against man, but against God. So again, when your parents correct you, know this, they know that it chafes and it hurts. Because when they were youths, when they were kids, they felt the chafe of correction as well. They felt the rod, both the physical at times and the spiritual. Show them respect when they say, hey, no, don't do that. Do your very best to listen the first time. And know this, after the discipline is meted out, and perhaps when the parent is away from you, if you listen hard enough, you might hear them cry too. For they always weep when you weep, even if it was their hand who brought the sting. A third call to remember and to tie together is God's expectation of a father to bless their home. A father must then determine and to supply whatever it is that those who are in their care need. A balance to that, remember, though, is that it's not always what is wanted. Our needs and our wants on the spiritual and the physical plane aren't the same. As a child, I think I mentioned this to Jill a couple times, there was one Christmas gift that I always wanted. I wanted the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. I never got the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier, by the way. I'm not even sure if any of those examples still exist, but that was like the penultimate best toy I could possibly imagine as a kid. Never got that. Didn't need it. Had plenty of toys. Had friends to play with. What we want is very often having nothing to do with the things that we need. And if you move away from the superficial toys of our youth and you think about what we want as young folks when we're growing up versus what we need, we often want to do things that would break our parents' hearts and break God's heart. But God desires that there is someone in our life to have that hard role of being the dispenser of no. And passing out the word no is challenging for those who do it. Because there's a lot of times that it begins to wear the constant, oh no, we can't do that. We shouldn't do that. So remind yourself this, parents. You say no when you must, but yes when you can, and God would be pleased. But never retreat from the responsibility to be the one to provide that stability. Beyond all of that, you must also be willing to provide and bless your family in the ways that will nurture their physical form. Put forth the effort to be a good provider of all things. Provide spiritual leadership in your home. Whomever is under your authority, you lead them well in the way to serve God. Just as Joshua's heart was, so yours should be. For remember that Eli, in his own relationship to his sons, refused to restrain them. He could have had the ability to change the destination of his children, himself and Israel in 1 Samuel chapter 2, by a little bit of restraint. As the text reminds us in Ephesians chapter 6, fathers have a unique opportunity to turn the hearts of their children away from the world and towards God Himself through their labors. And God also knows this about the role that you take. You can see it in His compassion and His teaching. That He doesn't expect you to do it alone. God Himself promises and pledges to be with us in all that He asks us to do. Whether it is leading our home, walking toward heaven, serving His Son, in any and every way. And He suggests to us that we can be more than the statistic that says we stayed. We can thrive. Children, no matter where you are in your life, maybe you've already moved out of your parents' home and you're establishing yourself. On this day, and maybe every day forward, make your father's heart rejoice, not with the gifts that you brought him, not because you found the perfect tie or the best gift ever, or you found the perfect flower in the yard. Make your father's heart, because you both can rejoice in the truth of God. That's the kind of gift that doesn't fade. Eventually that tie will go out of style. So I'm told. Eventually all those things will be stored in a box somewhere and forgotten of. But if you notice in the testimony in 3 John, in the 4th verse, this last refraining verse, John writes in a more broad sense, but we'll make the specific application inside our own homes and the closest relationships. I have no greater joy than this, than to hear of my children walking in truth. Give that gift to those who surround you. Give the gift of faithfulness and maturity and strength to those who are in your immediate care. If you rear your children in the sight of the Lord and they choose to walk in it, perhaps one day they too could have the privilege to see some of their own family walking in part through the sacrifice, the service that was given to you and you gave to them. If on this Lord's Day you require the prayers of these Christians together and your desire is to be closer to God, we want to pray with you and for you. We want to serve you. If you wish to become part of the body of Christ and have your sins washed away in the grave, we can serve you in some spiritual or physical capacity. Please come forward now while we stand together and sing.